On the show today, we have Deanne Bryant, who is conductor of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. They're giving a concert in Bloomington tonight at 7:30. And also Deanna Doty, who is music director for, and Tracy McCabe, who is developing and marketing person for, development and marketing person for Champaign-Urbana Ballet. They are collaborating, as they have for quite some years now, with Sinfonia da Camera and the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts to present Tchaikovsky's ballet, The Nutcracker. It opens on Friday, December 3rd, and continues through Sunday, the 5th. And we'll hear all about this year's version on Live and Local. I hope you'll stay tuned. We just heard the Marche Militaire Française, or simply means French Military March, by Camille Saint-Saëns. You can have a chance to hear that in concert by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony tonight in Bloomington on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus. And my guest on this portion of Live and Local is the conductor of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, Deanne Bryant. And she's on the phone with us right now. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
First of all, I don't have the right sheet in front of me. What time is that concert tonight?
Concert's at 7:30 and at Westbrook Auditorium at Illinois Wesleyan.
Westbrook Auditorium. And you've been with the Youth Orchestra for how long now?
This is my 17th season.
Good heavens.
I know. Time goes fast and we're having fun.
Well, and I know that in the on your website, and in previous materials I've seen, you always make quite a point of saying that Howard Rye was the founder of the group, but he was only with it for about 5 years, and then you took over. So it's really your group by now.
I would say yes. We've had a real good time, and Howard became ill during that fifth year, and you know, it was my blessing that he passed baton to me, and that's been what I've been keeping out of trouble with ever since.
And you were for a long time working with strings in the schools.
Right, I started the string program in Unit 5 in Normal and stayed with that for 25 years. And, you know, that was a blessing as well. And then I retired, and all of a sudden the symphony came along.
Oh, so they were a coincidence then.
It was.
I thought I remembered that
not
you were still doing
it. Not
planned at all. No, well, that worked out. So tell me about how the Youth Orchestra has developed in that time. What changes have you seen? What things have been especially challenging? What especially rewarding?
Well, I think the most challenging thing, and you conduct a youth symphony as well, is when you change personnel every year, and you'll have a real strong year, and then you'll have a building year, and the kids always do their best. You always know they're always going to do their best, and how we come to a conclusion at a concert totally amazes me every time, and I'm sure it does you as well. We bring our best notes and our best efforts, and so it's all kind of the biggest challenge and the biggest reward is in seeing all of that develop, especially this semester, because this was a building semester, and I have to say was, because last night's rehearsal proved me wrong. We've made it, so tonight's concert will be awesome.
Well, it may have been building, but in other words, that means it's been built.
Yes.
That's what you do the rehearsals for.
Yep.
I have to say that I've had the similar experience this year with the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, where just based on the auditions and who turned up and who didn't, I thought this was going to be, you know, a year, well, maybe we'll not quite be at the level of last year. And that's, I guess it's developed quicker than I expected.
Very amazing.
Have you found any trends in the time, the 17 years you've been with the orchestra, that either certain instruments have gotten stronger in the schools or less so, or any more difficulty with one group or another to find talented students?
Well, what I've seen is that we've been blessed with incredible cello teachers in Bloomington Normal. And so for a long, long time, cello land is very, very strong. And then we came through a period where viola land was very, very strong. And you don't know, you don't see it in the schools, except the programs are very large. Both Normal and Normal West have about 90 students in their program, string students.
That's great.
So the pool is quite good. And the percentage of kids who study privately, then you get more of those, and that's where it is. They're dedicated to what they're doing, and they're going to be progressing very well. As far as student changes, I just think the commitments that the kids have in their lives is just enormous. And it always is amazing to me that they can fit something extra like the Youth Symphony into an already wild schedule.
Do you find that the students' activities are increasing?
It feels like that. Of course, here in Unit 5, the kids are in school at the high school level at 7:15. So their days have gotten very much longer. These top kids, top students, tend to cram everything in. If they've got more minutes, they put more in it. So their days are longer. And they're still awake at 9 o'clock at night for our rehearsal, which is amazing.
When do you rehearse?
7 to 9 on Mondays.
And do you have problems with attendance at all? I mean, I know you've got an attendance policy. I read it on your website. But
we always have to deal with some conflicts if there's a performance at a school or something like that. The good thing about it is that these members are so dedicated that they make sure that I know what they're doing and we can plan ahead for events that kind of get in our way. They're very aware of the attendance policy, and I haven't found them abusing it at all. So that's a good thing, because we only have 10 rehearsals to get ready for, like tonight's performance.
When do you start rehearsing during the school year, and then how much of the year do they play?
Our first rehearsal is the Monday after the Labor Day Monday. With last Monday, we performed at Westminster Village, which is a retirement community here in Bloomington, and is our community outreach performance and our dress rehearsal performance as well. And then after tonight, we have one rehearsal in December to prepare playing for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, or with them, on their December 19th concert, which is the Christmas Pops.
So you're just going to have one time around to get that music ready?
Well, we're doing the Tannhauser. Karen Deal chose that from our selection of what we're playing, and then we're doing Sleigh Ride.
Mm.
So most of the kids are familiar with Sleigh Ride, although there will still be the new members, the younger members will not. The string kids don't know that. So it'll be probably an hour to put that together and be ready. And then we disband actually until February.
Mm.
Our next rehearsal will be February 14th, Valentine's Day, and then we have 10 rehearsals with the concert May 8th.
Well, so you're nicer to your kids than I am. I keep them going in January.
Well, my husband and I go to Florida in January.
Oh, well, there
so
you go.
In order to stay married, we do this.
So the youth orchestra benefits in that case.
Yes, we come back refreshed, and my husband will still let me do all this stuff.
Oh, well, that's awfully nice of him.
Yes.
And I'm sure the kids appreciate it. You mentioned earlier private lessons. Do all or most of your kids take private lessons?
Oh, most. Most. There may be a couple that do not. But the importance of that support when they're playing this more difficult music is you can't even, imagine what it would be like if they didn't have that kind of support.
Well, let's talk about the music a little bit. I'm looking at your program here. Of course, we played the Military March of Saint-Saëns to introduce the show, and we're going to hear in a moment some music of Giuseppe Verdi. Do you generally play music that is arranged for youth orchestra or that is original material, that professionals would play?
The March Militaire is an Isaac arrangement. It's nice and solid and really leaves out very little of the original.
It's Merle Isaac.
Yes, yep. It just happened to be what I purchased years ago, and we had it, and it's a good opener. The other things are what the big people would play.
The big people.
The chorus line is an arrangement, of course, that's a Loudon arrangement. But the Force of Destiny is what Verdi envisioned.
I'm guessing that that was the big challenge on this concert?
Most definitely. That and the Tannhauser, that's not an easy thing.
The entrance of the guests.
The Verdi is a challenge because of the very many segments within. So in order to move the orchestra from one little part to the next, with young players, that's something they don't have to do very much. So that is a real challenge there.
So in other words, for this, the musical sections that change mood and attitude and other things?
Right.
That's the challenge?
Right. And the first violins have insanely high notes.
Yeah. That can be scary if they don't manage it too well. Well,
they're doing very, very well. Very, very well.
And do they like this piece?
Oh, yes. Yes, they love it.
Any idea what's their favorite on this program?
Depends on who you ask. At the beginning of the semester, my trumpets are ready to, you know, do something vile to me because of the Tannhauser. So then a kid last night comes up to tell me it's his favorite thing now. So with the trumpet challenge and the Tannhauser with young trumpets. Of course, the Orpheus, the can-can part, there's a segment of the orchestra that would like to get up and dance while we're playing it, but we are going to not do that tonight.
Oh, you're not?
No, stage isn't big enough.
You could invite the audience to.
We could do that. We did that at Westminster Village, in fact, but no one took us up on it. No,
nobody hopped out of their wheelchairs and...
No. No, they did not.
And did that. Well, here's a recording of a professional orchestra playing the Force of Destiny Overture, also known as La Forza del Destino, Giuseppe Verdi. You can hear that piece played by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony tonight at 7:30 at Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus in Bloomington. And we're talking with their conductor, Deanne Bryant, here on Live and Local. Force of Destiny Overture of Giuseppe Verdi here on Live and Local. That piece will be among several on the concert tonight in Bloomington by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. Deanne Bryant is their conductor, has been since 1994, and she's with me right now on the phone. And the are you closing the concert with the selections from A Chorus Line?
Yes.
How do the kids take to something from musical theater like that? I mean, I'm asking partly because some of the kids in my own youth orchestra often clamor to do movie music, but I don't know how much they would take to this. This is almost qualifies as an older musical by now.
Yes, well, that's an interesting question. Last semester, I pulled out a Rodgers and Hammerstein medley, thinking this would be fun, and the pieces in it are, you know, neat. The kids didn't buy into it, so we didn't do it.
And how did you know they didn't buy into it? How did they let you know that?
Just not really playing it as well as I know they could play, and so, you know, I evaluate it quickly like that, and we'll go on. The Chorus Line was an instant super hit. I mean, if we don't get to play that at rehearsal at night, they feel let down.
Wow.
So they love the Chorus Line.
What do you think was the difference?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I know that they would not have known the songs any better than the Hammerstein songs.
Huh.
So I've been trying to figure that one out.
Maybe Rodgers, I guess, is too schmaltzy for them or something.
I don't know. They didn't seem to know the song Whistle a Happy Tune at all.
Wow. You obviously don't have too many kids involved in theater.
Apparently
in
not.
In the orchestra.
Yeah, apparently not. But, you know, I wasn't going to spend a lot of rehearsal time worrying about that when we're doing heavy pieces that we needed the time for. So just reevaluate and put something else in and go on.
I know when I've, pretty regularly asked my youth orchestra for, you know, what were their favorite pieces in the given year, it's usually the most serious stuff.
Yes, yes.
Do you find that also?
Fingal's Cave and all those, yes.
Huh. Oh, you did Fingal's Cave with the youth orchestra?
Yes, we have, but not. It's been a couple years.
And how did that go off? That's pretty difficult.
It went well. They dig into it like the force of destiny, and it's amazing what happens in 10 weeks.
Do the private teachers, as far as you know, work on the music with the students?
I know they do with the younger ones. They're very, you know, the young ones will take their music to the lessons, and I know that. The older ones, I'm sure they do not.
Hmm.
Unless they really are in a pinch for some help, and then they'll do it. If I say at a rehearsal next week, first violins, I need to hear that, they spend some time on it. So.
And what about sectional rehearsals for the orchestra? Do you always do the rehearsals, or do you break up sometimes?
We rehearse at University High School, which is the land of no space.
Mm.
So we really don't have room to break up for rehearsals. You know, several years ago, you came over on a workshop night, and we moved to another school where we had more space, and that worked out. We could do sectionals on that workshop night just once.
And you haven't tried that again?
We do it every year.
Mm.
So it gives us a time kind of to zero in on some particular problems. But as a rule, we don't.
Mm.
They have to put up with me all evening.
Well, how many of your kids are in the orchestra?
53.
So they're not protesting too loudly. That's a pretty good number.
Yep, 30 strings, and then the rest winds, percussion.
And you mentioned older versus younger students. What is the age range for the youth orchestra?
Well, let's see. Currently we have sixth grade through high school. We usually have one or two junior college members because of Heartland being here.
Hmm.
This year we don't, so that's the range. And we have students that come from Fairbury, which is about a 45-minute drive. We have a young lady from Winona who's the only violinist in Winona that drives down for us, and points in between.
And do you find, well, I assume that you find you have to choose music that is somehow going to be challenging to the stronger kids but still playable by the younger kids.
Right, that balancing act, yes, definitely.
That's tough.
Right, so the same song is something I know will be reachable by the younger ones early on, and then as we go through the semester, they get the idea of what we're doing and have practiced the music, so it works.
You have a soloist on this concert.
How
was this fellow chosen?
Well, this fellow was chosen because he is an alumnus of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony and a graduate of Normal Community, and he actually is over at the University of Illinois working on his master's degree on tuba performance. And this is his second year in that program, so I know he is at the point where performance is a really good thing, and he is a very fine tubist. He has his bachelor's degree from Illinois Wesleyan. So we like to invite back, for the fall concert, we like to invite back an alumnus who has gone on and recognized those efforts.
That's a great idea. James McCauley is his name.
James McCauley. We rehearsed with him last night. He's playing the first movement of the Gregson Tuba Concerto. Absolutely fun, amazing piece. If I ask the kids, they might say that's their favorite.
Really?
It's on the contemporary side, of course, because Tuba Land didn't come about for a while. And it has kind of a bandy feeling to it, but it's very lyrical. So the piece is very nice, just very nice. And the kids have a lot to do, but it went together very easily with the orchestra, just in case you want to think about that.
Well, we always do a concerto competition for our own students. Do you do that?
We do that second semester. Competition this year will be March the 2nd. It's open to our junior and senior members, and they receive a scholarship money and performing with the orchestra in May. Whoever wins that, and then usually a runner-up will get a monetary award as well.
Great. That's terrific.
Yep.
So maybe we'll talk to you before that happens, and maybe even have a conversation with whoever your winner turns out to be.
Yeah, I don't know who that will be.
Yeah, of course not.
I had forms for the last rehearsal we had, and had 10 forms ready to pick up, thinking that six would be interested. All 10 were gone, and a couple others asking for them. So this could be a really wild competition.
Good. Well, that'd be great.
Yes.
So James McCauley going to be featured in Edward Gregson's Tuba Concerto, first movement of that piece. Tonight at 7:30 at Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus in Bloomington. It's the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Deanne Bryant, who has been my guest for this portion of Live and Local. And is there any charge for that concert?
Absolutely none. That's one of our things we're proudest of. We feel that the fees that the students pay and the parents who support all that their children are involved in deserve a free concert.
All right. Well, I hope it all goes well, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And here is another one of the pieces that'll be on that concert. It's the overture to Jacques Offenbach's operetta called Orpheus in the Underworld. The Berlin Philharmonic is led by Herbert von Karajan. Was a performance of the overture to Orpheus in the Underworld by Jacques Offenbach, performed by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Herbert von Karajan. And that piece will be on the concert tonight at 7:30 by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony Orchestra. That's in Westbrook Auditorium of Presser Hall on the Illinois Wesleyan University campus. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra presenting the CUSO Holiday Concert on Wednesday, December 1st at 7:30 p.m. in the Follinger Great Hall at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Ring in the holidays with the Champaign-Urbana Family Tradition. Another Champaign-Urbana family tradition is the Champaign-Urbana Ballet performance with Sinfonia da Camera of the timeless ballet, The Nutcracker. And we had advertised an interview with their music director, or artistic director, rather, on this portion of Live and Local, and it appears that that is not going to happen, and we hope we'll be able to reschedule that. On tomorrow's show, we will have a conversation with Milton Scott, who is director of Opus 24, which is a choral ensemble in Decatur, part of the program of the Decatur Choral Society. They're giving their fall concert a week from tonight at 7:30, St. Patrick Catholic Church. Also on tomorrow's show, we're going to have a feature on a concert on Friday evening in Urbana at the Iron Post, which is a benefit concert featuring a number of jazz groups, a couple of jazz groups and a couple of other jazz performers, Boneyard Jazz Quintet, the Traditional Jazz Orchestra, pianist Donnie Heitler, and jazz singer Darden Purcell. That's going to be Friday night, and we'll have a conversation about that on tomorrow's Live and Local. And some other events going on in our area. Let's see, today is Tuesday. That means there is a faculty recital by William West and Keith Zimmerman in Bloomington tonight at Wesleyan in the Westbrook Auditorium. That's at 8 o'clock tonight. There's an acoustic Celtic music session with Paddy's Bargain at Celtic Mist Pub in Springfield tonight at 7 o'clock. Pianist Larry Larson is playing tonight at 5 o'clock at the Iron Post in Urbana. The Corn Desert Ramblers are at Rose Bowl Tavern, tonight in Urbana at 9 o'clock. Live Irish music session is tomorrow at 7 o'clock at Bentley's Pub, as it is every Wednesday evening, and that's in downtown Champaign. And the Diva and the Dude, who are Kathy Harden and Andy Baylor, singer and guitarist respectively, are at Clark Bar in Champaign. That's tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And those are some elements of some events you can go see and hear live. Let me know about any organization you might be involved in or any events you might know about by emailing me at willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L calendar at illinois.edu. edu, and we'll try to get that on and maybe get some guests involved in the show. Here's some music from The Nutcracker of Tchaikovsky. It comes from very late in the ballet, starting with the pas de deux of the prince and the sugar plum fairy. That is music from Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, the ballet that is, of course, one of those pieces you truly can call timeless. And we heard The Dance of the Prince and the Sugar Plum Fairy, which comes very near the end of the ballet, and a performance here by the London Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir Charles McCarris. You can hear Symphony at a Camera conducted by Ian Hobson, and more to the point, the Champaign-Urbana Ballet on stage at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Next Friday through Sunday, not this coming weekend, but Friday the 3rd through Sunday the 5th in the Tryon Festival Theater, their annual performance. And we do have the producer of the show with us, Tracy McCabe, has joined us in the studio. Tracy, thanks very much for appearing.
My pleasure. It's Nutcracker season, for sure.
Well, our first Nutcracker conversation, and I'll bet it won't be the last, was last week regarding something in Springfield called The Nutcracker All Jazzed Up that featured some techno music, and I'm not sure what all else was in that, but it sounded kind of fun.
I was going to say it's either very clever or very unfortunate, depending on how it turns out.
Well, but, I don't know. It was last weekend, so I haven't heard. But
I favor the perennial Nutcracker Tchaikovsky's score as it's meant to be played, and we're so happy to be performing with a 40-piece orchestra, and it's rare for a ballet company of our size, even for professional companies, to have live accompaniment for their performances these days. So we don't take it for granted, that's for sure.
Well, it's an expensive proposition to have an orchestra.
It is. Our artistic director, Deanna Doty, it's part of her commitment to the quality of what we do to make sure that we're engaging other local artists in what the ballet company is producing. Nutcracker is a time when we're able to do that, and Krannert Center and Sinfonia de Camera help make that possible.
Well, and this is your biggest moneymaker every year, too. I mean, it's part of the reason that you do a Nutcracker every year.
You know, it's interesting. It's actually a very large-scale and professionally produced production. So it is the largest thing we do. It is not a cash cow. I think for many companies, it's really, you know, when they use recorded music, then they can start making money. But when you're paying 40 musicians and all of the great union laborers who make the Nutcracker as spectacular and safe as it is for the many actors and dancers and children involved, and then, of course, the amazing venue of Krannert Center, all of those costs combined, plus a little bit publicity as well, it's not a great moneymaker for the company. We actually fundraise all year long to make it possible to do the Nutcracker. So it's an important part of who we are and what we do, and so we'll continue to fundraise as a board. But it's our ticket prices we've actually kept at the same level for 4 years. We want to make it accessible to families and to kids and to anyone in the community. So that's kind of part of our equation.
And this seems to be a question that gets asked of all arts groups right these days. How's that fundraising going?
Well, it's, you know, it's tough. Of course, we have those passionate people who are deeply involved in the ballet company, and you know, they're the 20% who give 80% of what we survive on.
Gee, sounds like public radio.
It sounds like public radio. Yeah, exactly. I think we're all in the same boat. But what's really wonderful is that there are passionate arts patrons who give every year, who believe in what you do. And so, you know, this is a downtime for us. Fiscally, we anticipated it. The company is certainly very solvent. The other thing is we're a volunteer organization. So our artistic director, all of the people who produce our sets, our costumes, and all of those things are completely volunteers. Mm. So we don't have a lot of overhead, and so we can weather an economic situation like we're in right now a little better than those groups that have a lot of overhead.
Have you had to do any cutbacks in the production, or are you adding to it this year? I mean, every year there's always surprises.
Yeah, there's no cutbacks, certainly no economic reason to cut back, but we change it every year. And this year we've added some interesting things to the battle scene. Our set designer, Andy Werfel, has added a cannon blast, and one of our little mice gets the better of it. We hope it's going to be a little piece of humor in the battle scene. We have some of our larger rats actually apprehend and don the apparel of our smaller soldiers. And so just adding a lot more to the battle scene to make it more clever and fun. And then in Act Two, the artistic director loves to take liberties with that choreography. She changes it up every year. And so this year we have some really astounding male dancers. Mm. And so she's done a very good job of trying to feature them in all of the pieces of Act Two. So I think audiences who have seen us before are going to really appreciate a very fresh approach to the show this year.
Is Mason Anders still with the company? Has he moved on?
So Mason Anders, one of our company dancers, was accepted into the training program at San Francisco Ballet.
Wow.
In fact, we've had a number of dancers who've gone on to great things in the past, and we expect nothing less of him. He is dancing, I believe, as a mouse in San Francisco Ballet's Nutcracker.
So he's moved from the prince to a mouse.
Yeah, yeah. It's how it works. But we expect that he's having the time of his life out west. And so we're really proud of the training that he got here at Champaign Ballet Academy, and that is something that prepared him for that. We have another dancer who went to a training program at Houston Ballet and another one who went to a training program at Harrod. These training programs are really like pre-apprentice programs. So you go to this for a year, and then hopefully you're offered an apprenticeship with the company that you're training with.
In addition to students in the Champaign Ballet Academy and elsewhere, you involve lots of community members who, are they necessarily involved with the ballet otherwise or with the ballet training programs?
No, but we certainly hope that, you know, through this experience of being in the Nutcracker, that it's going to create in them a love for ballet and, you know, spark that passion of a talented kid who might not otherwise perform. So we actually have a large number of boys and men who are involved in the production, many of whom, once they're introduced to ballet as a concept, continuing classes after the Nutcracker. But we have students and children and actors local coming from all different studios, all walks of life, all ages, and they come together and they rehearse for 12 weeks to put on a really professional-looking production. So
you've sometimes drafted some of these adults, non-dancing adults, into the role of Drosselmeyer. Who gets to do that this year?
So for about the fifth or sixth year in a row, Brett Feddersen is reprising the role of Drosselmeyer. It's probably the most complex role in the entire ballet. A tremendous amount of pantomime, has to communicate, you know, everything through this very stoic-looking face and his hands and gestures. So Brett's become very adept at it. And I think Drosselmeyer is probably one of my favorite traditions out of the ballet. And we give him a nice dark spin. So in this era where Harry Potter rules, you know, Drosselmeyer doesn't fail to impress the young kids who come to see it.
But he's not he's not evil in the way that Lord Voldemort is.
I would say that not in that way.
Pardon me for saying his name.
exactly. He's got his darker side, though. And we stage the ballet as, and the battle scene and all the kind of horror and then beauty that follows from that as his revenge and then love letter, if you will, to his goddaughter who's come of age. And Clara is the main role for the girl in the ballet. And so he kind of orchestrates what happens to her. He arrives at the party and realizes she's grown and she's matured and she falls in love with this Nutcracker doll, despite the fact that he's given her much more amazing gifts. So it's kind of an interesting story that we weave into the whole thing.
So who are your lead dancers this year?
We have two Claras. One is Alice Lynn, and one is Anna Lynn, unrelated. We have two Sugar Plum Fairies, Alexandra Warwick and Claire Liu. And we have two Waltz Cavaliers, Gibby Kirby and Mark Dallaire, two Nutcrackers, Ben Chapman and Andrew Cribbett. So a lot of guys in the mix and all very dynamic. The girls are really strong this year. So we've mixed it up, and you can come to one or two performances and perhaps see a very different experience.
Do you usually double cast those roles?
We do, for a couple of reasons, to give as many people as possible the opportunity. When you have strong dancers, it's important to give them roles that are challenging to them. The other thing is that we don't want to put all of our eggs in one basket, and so our artistic director makes sure that there is always a backup. When you're dealing with live performance, you're dealing with dance, the possibility of injury is actually pretty great. So you always want to have someone who can fill in no way degrade the quality of the performance that our audience has bought tickets to see.
And, of course, you're challenging more of the students and more of the dancers and developing more talent.
Right. And, you know, these are kids who, you know, we set the bar really high, and they never fail to meet or exceed expectations. I mean, I heard about some interesting research where they put brain scans on baseball players, and when they hit a home run, they had this, you know, elation, if you will. And the people in the stands, they also tested, and they had the exact same reaction. And that's really what our ballet is about. You know, no matter who's dancing, they're putting their all into it. They are so passionate, and the audience is feeling that. So, you know, even if it's a 13-year-old kid who's just killing it on stage and doing, you know, their absolute best and loving what they're doing, the experience for the audience is tremendous. So we're glad to offer it every year.
And it's the Nutcracker at Krannert Center, put on by Champaign-Urbana Ballet with Sinfonietta Camera. And performances Friday the 3rd and Saturday the 4th at 7:30, Saturday and Sunday at 2 o'clock, and then there's a Sunday evening performance on the 5th at 6 o'clock. For more information, call the Krannert Center, 217-333-6280, or visit cuballet.com. Tracy McCabe, producer of the show, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kevin.
Support for today comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. For more information, thecorkscrew.com. It's Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana, W293 AF.